My name is Lawrence Allen.
I'm Ronald Shaw.
I'm Rahul Vora.
And this is Bad Time Radio.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Bad Time Radio. This time we're doing a classic radio app. So I dug deep into the dark fantasy archive of ones that I remembered and picked this one, The Man with the Scarlet Satchel, an especially silly episode of a already very silly show. Let's go around and spoiler free. Would you recommend this episode? Raul, what do you think?
Yeah, I would actually. There are some pretty stupid parts, but I really enjoyed the premise. Really gets me. It just does it for me.
You know, if I remember at the end, I'm going to ask you to just explain what the premise is, because frankly, I kind of don't know.
Yeah, I'm very interested in what you think the premise is.
Anyways, and as for me, okay, this one, it kind of sneaks up on you. If you're not paying attention to it, it feels like just a normal episode of old time radio. But then if you start thinking about it for a sec, you're like, wait, what? A lot? And for that reason, I'd say check it out. The fact that it's only like 22 minutes doesn't hurt at all. Ronald, what do you think?
I think I'm going to give this one a not recommend. There are some funny parts. It has at least one part that's like a little creepy because of the way the actress plays it. But the climax, I kept spacing out and not paying attention to what he was saying, which, you know, that's just kind of a sign that it's just not that interesting of a radio episode, even for radio episodes. So
yeah, when you're spacing out during the climactic monologue that the entire episode has been building towards, that's a bad sign.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, this whole time I've been trying to find out what this is. Oh my God, I just don't care what he's saying.
Yeah. Anyways, you guys want to roll for the summary?
Sounds good.
Yeah. Okay. Ah, shit, it's a Ronald ep.
A classic Ronald ep?
The one right. Of us who probably is the best at summarizing.
But also is the one who said he kept spacing out during it. Thankfully, I listened to it 3 times so that I kind of figured out what was going on and I wrote notes.
And it's very possible that you prepared for this more than I have for like several final exams.
Well, I sometimes listen to it while I'm cooking the episode, which is not that great because I'm not paying it super close attention when I'm doing it. But it kind of reinforces. I usually do that on my second listen. So, and then I'd listen to it again to take notes on it. So, anyways.
Okay.
So, it starts off with like a little stinger, kind of. And it almost feels like it would be mid-episode. But it's not mid-episode. It's maybe mentioned in the middle of the episode. But this guy goes, this seemingly old man goes into a store. And he's looking at bags. And he's like, yes, bring me that scarlet one. And the guy's like, this one here? And he's like, yes, I like that one because it looks like blood. And so you think this guy's kind of creepy, but I'm very confused by his character.
Yeah, because he's the object like of horror, but also the person who's in the right. So it's a trick.
Yeah, exactly. It's a really strange, trick throughout. It's almost a cheat. In some ways. But so then it cuts to a conversation between a lawyer named Willard.
Oh, one thing though. So I want to just state plainly, the opening scene that's supposed to draw you into the reality of this episode is a guy buying a satchel and being kind of creepy. And then there's a pretentious organ sting after he says that the color red reminds him of blood. And that's supposed to be like this big mysterious thing that is the question the rest of the episode is trying to answer. And it really is just a guy being a little bit of an asshole to a sales clerk.
Yeah, it's just a creepy thing to say. And it really has nothing to do with what he does to get revenge or why he comes back. But yeah, he just likes blood, I guess. And that's not even like what his job is related to. I don't know. Anyways, so that part is really weird. Then it cuts to a conversation between a lawyer named Willard and a private nurse named Rose Esther. And they're talking about, oh, We have this deal, right? You've cut me in on the deal, and it's going to finalize tonight. And Willard explains that they kind of have this little hustle going on where they're going to trick the guy that they're working for, Peter Craig, who's an old man, and he's kind of sick, and he has to take a lot of medicine. And they slip him this medicine that basically is just screws over his mind, and he kind of goes blank, and they get him to sign whatever they want him to. And so they're going to have him sign his estate over to the lawyer Willard, and then Willard is going to give part of that money to the nurse.
You know, I'm going to dispute your characterization of this multiple felony thing as a minor hustle.
Well, you know, it wouldn't work in real life. Like I feel like some guy gets murdered, and then it's like, huh, he signed over his entire estate to the one guy who saw it happen. That seems pretty suspicious. And they even reveal later that there was a murder investigation. It's like, what were those cops doing, dude?
No. The thing is that Rose and Sam are very, very smart in planning this murder, because Sam is going to wait a whole week before he gives Rose her cut. And she's actually complaining about having to wait that long. She's very upset about it.
Yeah, she also says something like, oh, I should get more. You're making out with a million and I'm only getting 100,000. It's like, dude, he really didn't have to give you anything, to be honest.
Because Rose is the one who gives him the medicine. So Rose is pretty critical here.
I feel like he could just slip it into a drink, but I don't know.
I don't know.
It doesn't exactly take a nursing.
Well, I mean, now that she's in it, he can't double.
Oh, yes.
Right?
Yes. Now that she's in it, because she even threatens him. Is like, oh, I'll tell him.
Yeah. She's like, don't make me lose my patience.
Yeah, or else you never know what I'll do.
I thought they were like poisoning him in some discreet way. I didn't realize it was like, I thought it was like really hard to figure out like how they murdered him.
I mean, the way they murder him is just they leave him alone and then he gets scared and has a heart attack.
Yeah,
is that what happened?
I wasn't even clear that it was intended to be murder. I think he just died.
Well, the thing is that they leave him, and then for some reason that has the result of killing him, and they knew that it would. I guess that does explain a little bit why the cops don't come after him, because it would be pretty fucking hard to prove, like, hey, this guy had a heart attack, and I somehow knew that he would have a heart attack and made that happen without poisoning him.
Well, I kind of just assumed it was like, well, you screwed up my head, and that was the only reason I was sick. But by incident, you were a murderer. But I didn't necessarily think that they really intended to kill him. They were just tricking him into giving away his money.
I think that I don't know. This is one of the many sort of maddening little details in this episode that's never really explained and never adds up to much. The effect is that they do somehow murder him, because otherwise he couldn't come back as a vengeful zombie thing.
According to his logic, yes. So they're talking. So they cut to that night, and she slips him some medicine. And
he says something. She offers him some warm milk, and then he exclaims, "Warm milk? Not on your life!" Which was amusing to me.
He's very passionate about not drinking warm milk, which is weird, because the nurse seems like she would only offer that if he had done it before.
I think she was trying to distract him
from
the weird taste of the prior thing. But he was like, yo, I'm lactose intolerant. And he already forgot, you know?
Yeah.
So your theory is that he'll be so angry at being offered milk that he won't notice that the thing he just ate tasted like bitter almonds or whatever?
Yeah, exactly. Works every time.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I'm sure he has a distinguished enough palate to tell apart medicines by their taste, right?
This guy has quite a large like collection of sort of unexplained things happening with him.
His CV is very impressive.
Yeah, among other things, I think he might be a rabbi. They don't talk about it, but we'll get to it. I think he's like low key just a secret rabbi.
No, I don't think that the golem is mystical in any way. It's a robot.
So your theory is that he's a ghost who made a robot?
That's the only thing I can think of. That is the only thing I can think of. Because before he even knew he was murdered, he wanted that thing in his. The clay in his.
I just realized that. Jesus Christ.
About that.
Anyways.
Okay, so let's move forward and we'll talk about that later.
Well, unless he knew that those two were up to no good.
But then why didn't he just stop them instead of dying and then murdering them with a robot?
Yeah, well, he wouldn't have the satisfaction.
He seemed to fully trust them while he was alive.
He didn't fully trust them because he wouldn't drink the milk. That was the tell.
Milk is a classic way.
That's the surest sign that you trust someone completely is that you'll drink an opaque liquid they give you. Because think how easy it would be to hide cum, spit, piss, whatever you wanted to in there. So it's sort of like, you know how if a dog...
Man, I need Lawrence to try and poison me because I don't think he's going to succeed.
He's thought about it too much.
He's like, milk masks everything, dude. It doesn't matter what carbolic acid.
He's like, antimatter. Does the milk taste different?
A bit salty, perhaps.
Did you want my money or not?
Just leave. I drink it. So they feed him the medicine, and then the lawyer says, like, oh, I noticed that I was looking at your estate papers earlier, and it never got fully signed over to you. I just need you to sign a few things. And then he goes, like, I'm very tired. I better sign these quickly.
And there's also this thing where he spends, like, this thing is only 22 minutes long. The actual play is probably about 20 minutes. And they literally spend 30 seconds of that time with him talking about how he needs his glasses and can't see anything without them. A detail which is never mentioned again and does not matter at all.
There's a lot of filler in this episode. I mean, they really could have done this episode in 10 minutes easily. And it's 22 minutes because there's just like a lot of scenes that, like, there's a whole character in here that does not matter at all. Does not give any context to anything. Professor White, yeah. He shows up basically just to chatter on for a while because they needed to fill up the episode time.
Well, they needed a reason to go into his laboratory.
Well, he was going in anyway because it's his property now, I guess.
Oh.
Okay, well, anyways. So we'll get to the interesting parts because Willard gets him to sign something before he passes out, and then presumably Willard leaves, and then it cuts forward a little bit to sometime in the night when Peter Craig wakes up and he says, oh, they left me here all alone. And I don't really know what he's getting at. Like, if they normally sit by his bed or something and wait for him, but he wakes up and he's freaking out. And then I guess he dies. That's the end of that scene. And then it kind of cuts forward in time a little bit.
Actually, I think on our first episode, we were discussing this a little bit. Where I was suggesting that a character could have died of a heart attack, and you were asking how on earth you would show someone having a heart attack on the radio, and I would like to present this episode, because here you find out exactly how you show someone dying of a heart attack on the radio, which is they go, ah, my heart, a bunch, and then it goes silent. So there's your fucking answer, Ronald.
There you go.
7 years late, I think? Six? Somewhere in there.
Wow. It's crazy we've been doing it that long. I mean, that is one way. And I will say that this episode is very guilty of that just in general, of just like describing things that are happening in words rather than kind of leaving it up to the imagination. But, you know, on my heart's a pretty good one, at least. I want those to be my last words.
And the weird thing is you're going to actually die of an obstructed bowel, so you're just sort of shouting that to confuse people.
Yeah, the coroner is going to be like, Jesus, man, this guy was an idiot.
Did he think his heart was down by his butt? What the fuck?
Why does it smell like chicken wings?
I didn't even get that far. Why did it smell like chicken wings?
You know, if you eat too many chicken wings, I feel like you get constipated.
Oh, you're saying that I ate so many chicken wings that I got an obstructed bowel?
Chicken wing megacolon.
Well, for some reason, it didn't turn into poop. It just stayed.
It was just so much.
Chicken,
you know?
Wings in my bowel.
Well, you see, Ronald, this is actually going to be the climax of my clever plan to poison you by grinding up chicken wings, including their bones, and then serving them to you in milk.
It all comes back to the milk.
This sounds crazy, but I'm pretty sure Ronald's going to know.
Okay, I want to have a sidebar here. Okay. Speaking of chicken wings and eating bones. All right. Lawrence, I have a question for you. You are a vegetarian now, right? But you didn't always. You weren't always. Is that right?
Yeah. I think it's been like about a year since I've intentionally ordered and eaten meat. But yeah, I definitely there have been times when I slipped either by accident or design. And I was not a vegetarian up until like age 20, I think.
OK, well, yeah, I'm not trying to question your vegetarianism. The point is here, have you or have you not eaten chicken wings whole with the bone?
You know what, Ronald? One, yes, of course. And two, it is weird to me that everyone doesn't do that because the bones are quite tasty. They have a fairly pleasant texture. They make you feel like a big man biting through them, and the marrow's tasty. So in conclusion, I'm not the weird one. Society is.
I mean,
I just
don't understand how it goes through your body.
I don't either. I feel like it would shatter into little splinters that would tear up your throat and your mouth and your intestines and just shred you from the inside out like a saw trap.
Well, you know what they say, love your body and your body will love you. And I practice a very strange form of BDSM on my body.
It's because they tell you
make any fucking sense. I'm sorry, guys.
They tell you not to give chicken bones to dogs, right? Like for that
reason.
Yeah,
now, Rahul, I'd like a sidebar. Do you think a dog and a human are the same thing?
I think they're close enough. I mean, for the method of bowel perforation that we're talking about
to be fair, I don't think that you don't give dogs chicken wings because it'll pierce their bowels. I think it's because they'll choke on them.
Yeah, and I'm excellent at not choking on things. Keep that in mind, ladies.
And well, wouldn't that be for guys? Or?
No. I'm saying that if you... Never mind.
You mean like
I don't fucking
they're
going to
choke with
saying.
Their fist or what? What is happening?
Yeah. Any weird fetish you have that involves someone not choking, I'm your man.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. So, you know, the whole chicken wings thing aside, I didn't even remember. Oh, yeah. I do remember
it's
how we got
really
on it,
like
it
nothing
matter.
Came out. Like what came out?
I mean, if you want to get gross chunks of like bone. I mean,
see,
what did you
okay,
expect?
If there are bones coming out, that could definitely perforate your colon.
I mean, it didn't, so whatever. I think colons are a lot harder to perforate than you give them credit for.
Well, people have died from eating toothpicks.
That's a toothpick.
Well, a fucking bone?
Well, you know what? He did it, and he's fine, so therefore it's always safe.
Yeah. You know what? I'm putting this out to the audience. I don't think you should eat meat, really, but if you want to get down with some chicken wings, eat the fucking bones. They're delicious. Do it. Don't
you
be a coward.
I guess it's obviously impossible to eat, like, I feel stupid even saying this, but bones from any other animal, right? Like, there's nothing
else. Reminder to everyone out there that we are not medical professionals. Do not take advice from Lawrence. That's speaking to your doctor first.
Go call your doctor and ask him if you can eat bones.
I think that eating some bones are fine, actually. On smaller animals and stuff.
Like human bones?
Okay,
well,
now,
I don't think
Raul,
like big mammals, you can bite through them. Like a cow bone is really
No, you probably couldn't.
I think it comes down to how much time you're willing to put in. Because I bet if you boiled like a cow bone for long enough, you could probably turn it pretty gelatinous.
Could you? I think it would just get really hard.
Yeah, huh. I don't know. I feel like you'd have to process it with some chemical, like vinegar or something.
I don't know. You know what? I'm not a chemist.
Yeah. And to answer your question, Raul, I think you could eat the bones of basically any bird or anything about the size of a mouse. I wouldn't encourage you to do so, though. Anyways, you guys want to talk about this weird...
Yeah, let's bang this one out, and then we'll talk more about bones and eating them, consuming them.
It's the bonus code.
Yeah, the bonus code. So I think we're to the part where the lawyer is reading, the lawyer Willard is reading the will, and he talks about how he's given out some of the estate. The guy, Peter Craig, died, and he gave out some of his estate to his servants, and then everyone leaves except for the nurse, and they basically congratulate each other like they did it. And no one suspects anything because that guy didn't have any family or anything to leave anyone to leave stuff to. And no one thought it was weird that he left stuff to his lawyer. Who'd leave stuff to their lawyer? Come on. Right? Law? That's an evil profession.
I mean, to be fair, this guy apparently had like no friends that the lawyer was aware of. So, drug.
Well, no, he had the one friend.
The lawyer didn't know about him. So I guess in all of the time they'd been hanging out, he'd never mentioned him.
Never mentioned his best bud.
Yeah, although I guess, I mean, how good of a friend do you have to be before you tell it to some random lawyer about him?
Well, that lawyer had been with him for a while, right?
But even so, I mean, tops, they're seeing each other like, what, once a month, right?
Yeah, I assumed that Willard and Peter Craig had a pretty professional relationship outside of the whole murder thing.
Yeah. Which, I mean, is a violation of business and professional etiquette, as well as an ethical concern, of course.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yeah, so Rose and Willard are congratulating each other, and he tells her that, oh, I'll send your money in a week, and blah, blah, blah. There isn't really much information exchanged here.
Oh, so Craig had left some sealed instructions about, like, hey, this should only be open in the event of my death. And Rose is like, hey, what was in those instructions? And Sam's like, oh, it was just that he wanted to be buried with a weird package. And I looked inside the package and it was just modeling clay, which is basically just Play-Doh. Albeit, I think it's made out of different stuff. But, you know, it's the same idea. And, yeah, strange.
And I feel like Rose starts acting out of character here. She starts acting like a little scared, I feel. And there's no reason for it.
There is an organ stink. They say modeling clay, and both of them seem pretty freaked out by that. And it's like, I mean, it's fucking clay, and the guy's dead.
Yeah, what is he gonna do?
Roll come up back to life.
The only thing that I do with modeling clay is roll it up into a hot dog
and eat it.
Well, Play-Doh does smell really good. I've always wanted to eat it.
Does it?
It's non-toxic.
Yeah, I mean, that makes me think that I could eat it. But I haven't.
Huh. You know, I think this is Ronald, one of those like, hey, my friend has a question type situations where Ronald is just confessing that he eats several tubs of Play-Doh every day.
I haven't actually touched Play-Doh in a long time. But I remember
you're missing out.
Enjoying it because the smell and the feel is really great.
I do not remember Play-Doh smelling good. That is so strange. Are you sure?
Take a whiff. You'll thank me later.
Am
I sure?
Yeah.
I would never forget something like that.
I don't know. It's just so weird that, like, I'm questioning if you had, like a really long night and you just had, like, you polished off, like, a bottle of Hennessy and this memory just came to you. And
you polish off a bottle of Hennessy and the only thing left to do is to go get into the fucking Play-Doh and just nosh.
Well, it's been a good night, man.
Dude, I don't think I've messed with Play-Doh since like elementary school or maybe middle school. I don't think I've touched it since then.
And it's the Play-Doh sounds like the worst rap song in the world, incidentally. It's just
that
all
sounds,
about
that sounds kind of incredible.
Yes. We should make a drink. We should start a bar just to make a Play-Doh drink.
Okay. Any listeners out there, if you can confirm this, please. I think I saw that there was some edible Play-Doh at some point.
What?
I don't know how that works. And it seems like it'd be kind of disgusting.
Dude, our society is so decadent. Like, this just disgusts me. Edible Play-Doh? Have we gone too far?
That's basically like cookie dough.
This is like, well, it's not like cookie dough.
How do you know? You haven't tried it.
They both have dough in the name.
No, I mean, do you keep it out? Like, because it'll go bad.
Well, I don't know. I don't know. I never tried it.
I mean, this is a pretty, pretty basic distinction between the two, right?
If it has butter in it, you probably have to refrigerate it.
Were you just playing with cookie dough?
I mean, I
want to double back a little bit. A bar where you can get drunk and then play with Play-Doh actually sounds really fun.
That's like the time I would most be interested in playing with Play-Doh.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know what? Good idea. That's $1 million idea. That one's a freebie.
Yeah, that's a freebie. And for other ideas, join our Patreon and you'll get a You get a special list of
one idea each week.
Yes. Maybe month. Let's do month so we don't pressure ourselves.
Definitely. I don't have many good ideas.
I do keep pondering, like, hey, a lot of podcasts have a Patreon. Could we launch one? And then the sheer humiliation of trying to launch a Patreon when we only have 5 listeners, like, hits me. And I'm like, no, that's a horrible idea.
We can't get people to listen to our show for free. I don't think anyone's going to pay.
Yeah, it would just be the 3 of us contributing to it, I guess, just to try the whole, like, you put $1 in the tip jar when you come out, you know?
What we need to do is get Elon Musk's attention somehow. So he buys out the podcast.
Tell him that it's an NFT or something.
Oh, that's a good one.
An
NFT
is worth $60 billion.
An NFT of his kid's name, Axpadoodle or whatever. You know what I'm talking about? I forgot the name.
But that he and Grimes had before they split up.
Yeah, so he lost control of his child's name. And he has to buy it back. Maybe a terrible father if he didn't drop.
That's just you're just talking about a scam on Elon Musk. This has nothing to do with the radio show at this point.
Were we not talking about scamming Elon Musk?
Now, real talk, I don't think that there's any way that Elon Musk either is a good father or cares about being a good father. So,
dude,
I don't think
he has 8 kids. Did you know that?
Jesus Christ!
I thought he only had the one X12 or whatever. But he's got like a jillion kids. So crazy.
I mean, I don't understand why that's surprising to you. Do you read a lot of like Elon Musk? Like,
well, he has the most powerful
interviews.
Well, the thing is, he has the most powerful virgin energy of anyone I've ever seen. And keep in mind, I've seen Rahul. High five, Lawrence. Surprise me that he somehow has acquired some kids. Anyways,
heard of artificial insemination? Have you seen the first episode of Black Mirror?
Ronald, not only have I heard of artificial insemination, I've done it to you several times. Remember all that milk I had you drink? I'm not good at it, but...
Have you seen the first episode of Black Mirror, with the one with the pig?
No.
Is that artificial insemination?
It doesn't have to do with
this.
It's
artificial?
Just, it's badass.
What just happened?
You know, Raul... It's insemination because presumably his semen goes in the pig. And, I mean, it doesn't seem natural to me, so...
Is insemination...
It goes against God's teachings.
Is insemination only with the semen, or is it... Does it imply fertilization?
The pig got pregnant? Well, you know what? They don't actually show you what happens to that pig. That dude might have knocked that pig up.
He could have made a pig-human hybrid. We don't know.
Yeah. Anyways,
that might be in one of the later episodes. I haven't seen the newest season. Yeah, do you guys want to talk about the episode? I keep getting sidetracked. This is what this episode did to me. Okay?
Blame the episode for your failings.
All right. I'm gonna bang through this, and then we can talk about Elon Musk fucking a pig.
I feel like saying that sentence puts a target on
I'm going to get sued. Look, this is a reminder out there to everyone that nothing I say is about anyone specific. And if those names resemble anyone in the real world, it's purely by coincidence. So just letting you guys know.
And here's me saying that for the record, I think that Elon Musk, specifically that Elon Musk, the weird South African blood diamond merchant who founded PayPal, I want to say, and union busts out the hell out of Tesla and is just generally an incredibly lame asshole on Twitter, is definitely a virgin and fucks only pigs, and come at me, bro. This is how we're going to get him to buy out the podcast.
Say what we will about Elon Musk, I'm pretty sure he's not a virgin.
You don't know, man. He could have, like I said, well, okay, if he fucked a pig, does that take away his virginity?
Yeah, Lawrence.
Do you have to lay with another human to lose your virginity? That's an open question. All right. Think about that one for the end of the episode.
You know,
a would you rather.
Okay. All right.
Would you rather fuck a pig or fuck a person?
Would you rather be a virgin or fuck a pig? That's the question.
But here's a twist. The pig is really hot.
How bad are you down? It sounds like Rahul's down pretty bad.
Those trotters, my God.
He's talking about trotters already.
Big, weird, painted on eyebrows, just winking at you.
sounds like Lawrence has thought about this a little much. So
anyways, you know what?
He sounds down pretty bad too. All right, let's so do this. They you know, they talk about the weird bat, or they talk about the weird box that he got buried with, and now it cuts to a lawyer, and he meets up with this guy, Professor White, who's an old friend of Peter Craig's, and they go into his laboratory. They don't really talk about why they're going in, but I assumed it was because Willard now owns Craig's estate, so he's looking at all the property he owns now.
Well, it's Professor White just showed up trying to see the dead guy, Craig, and then Willard's all like, oh, he's dead. I'm sorry. I didn't know he had any friends. And the guy's like, oh, that's fine. Can I see his laboratory? You know, he was a god-tier electrical engineer, which strange. So then they go in and look at his laboratory.
He also has a really funny line where he's like, oh, yeah, he was a genius with wires and circuits and electricity and all that stuff. And I just hope that that's how everyone describes everyone someday. You know, you just throw out a spattering of vocabulary that's somehow related to their job. It's like, oh, yeah, he's good with all that stuff. You know, capacitors and resistors and computer chips, you know, anything of that nature.
Now, Raul, I don't want to get too personal, but you are actually an electrical engineer, sort of, right?
Yes, yeah.
How accurate was this description of electrical engineering?
It's actually incredibly accurate.
How many golems have you firsthand built?
Yeah, so we built them in undergrad, which is why this old time radio, like, it just, I felt so connected to it, because the golems, the wires, you know, that was my college experience.
Beautiful, beautiful.
And of course, you did them in undergrad, but keep in mind, in the 1940s, using electrical engineering to build a golem was cutting edge science. So, of course, this guy, like, he might have even been the first person to do it, and that's how he got his doctorate.
Yeah, probably. I remember some weird stuff, like some old-ass books, and, you know, you don't pay attention to any of that. You just find the solution manual online, but, yeah, he could have been one of the authors. I don't know.
Yeah?
We'll never know.
Anyways.
The world may never know. Yeah, so they go, and they're going to go into this laboratory, and they comment, like, oh, hey, the door is sealed up with wax, because apparently the cops were doing some kind of investigation into his death. They thought maybe it was murder. And I've never heard of this, but I guess they waxed up his door to make sure nobody went in there.
I guess, but I feel like you could just unwax it and rewax it. Is there like a special seal in the wax, or?
Yeah, it has the king's seal.
And you can break it and probably even forge it, but if you do, you'll lose the king's favor, and of course the Nightwalkers will come after you then. But not the ones from Game of Thrones, different Nightwalkers.
These are just guys who walk around in the night. They're not particularly scary.
They're a little freaky.
Well, they're a little. I mean, it's mostly just homelessness that causes them to do that.
That's pretty scary. Yeah.
I mean, the scary part is that we're all a step away from homelessness, you know? And there's really no social safety nets.
It's like 3 bad days and any of us could lose everything we have.
Yeah, but the world is my home, so I'll never be homeless.
Yeah.
God's also always watching over me.
So when they walk into the laboratory, like, there's this whole thing where the lawyer is just like, hey, let me get the light switch. The light switch is very inconveniently placed. And he kind of exclaims it a little bit. And it was strange to me that this radio show wasted time on them turning on the lights.
I'm telling you, half of this episode was just time wasting lines. Like, there's so much filler in this. It's only 25 minutes or something. It's really short, and it's mostly filler. There's really not that much there, but yes. And then they kind of chatter on. They also chatter on for a little bit on the guy's job, and that he was an electrical wizard, which it doesn't. I don't know what it has to do with the story, unless the golem that he made is some kind of robot.
I mean, but it must.
That's not
no,
clear at all.
There's also this part where they're in this laboratory. And the lawyer is like, man, all these wires and shit, so creepy in here.
Yeah, right. It's like, are wires creepy?
Was that the prevailing thought around electronics back then in the 40s? That it's like dark science, you know?
I mean, that's the prevailing attitude now. You know, the way that you find an electrical engineer is you present a five-year-old child with some wires, and 90% of them will recoil in horror, but the other 10% will become amused or aroused or enthralled by the wires. And that's how you know that person's going to grow up to be an electrical engineer.
Yeah, I mean, we're the chosen few. We're God's chosen electrical engineers. That's what they tell us at the Academy, at least.
I do appear to have just outlined a system where 10% of the Earth's population is electrical engineers.
Well, genetically.
Yeah. I guess you don't have to follow through on it.
Right.
Well, I mean, if you don't follow through, they'll just recycle you.
Yeah. Yep. You ever heard of Soylent Green?
Yeah. So anyways, they go inside the laboratory and they find a table covered in tiny wire and modeling clay, which the episode tries to make very scary. And there's also a damp towel and a locket that Craig got buried with a picture of a young boy in it, which is never mentioned again. And it's unclear what the fuck it means. I guess maybe he had a son, question mark. But if so.
Yeah, but it said he didn't have any family. So I don't know who the boy was. This guy might have been a pedophile.
Or it could have just been that, like, he bought the locket and it had a stock photo in it. And he thought the stock photo looked pretty sharp and gave him an air of mystery. So he just never took it off. Maybe the episode
and wanted to be buried with
gay.
It specifically.
I don't know.
I think he sucked the soul of that person into the golem.
Or maybe it was him as a child, and he just, you know, it's a constant reminder of youth.
Yeah.
Oh, and they also make a very big deal that the sealed door was the only way in, and there are no other like windows or anything, which. Unclear what the fuck is going on, because the ghost or thing, when we eventually meet it, is very clearly corporeal, but apparently can also phase through walls or something.
I don't know how he got out, because they make it clear that he got out of his tomb by pushing open the lid. So how did he get out of the sealed door? I don't know.
Yeah.
But,
and I thought it might be something where he had, like, possessed the clay and was coming after people with that, which would be kind of cool, but no, that isn't it at all.
He explicitly says that's not it, so... You know, that would have been a good thought.
It certainly would have tied off a few more things in this.
Also, apparently he built the golem after he got out of his tomb because he went back to the lab to do it. It seems, right?
Yeah,
but
definitely.
Because he had the box of modeling clay buried with him. And then I guess he came out and somehow got in and out of the lab without opening the door. And so why did he even need to be buried with it?
Just
leave it in the lab.
I guess my bigger question is, he's already a terrifying ghost. Why the fuck does he need to make this golem, which they, apparently as described is only about 6 inches tall as well? It seems like just sort of a hat on a hat, you know?
You know, I'm sorry that it's just a small golem made out of mud. It's not that scary to me. I mean, you know, I guess I would be scared, like, oh my God, there's some weird thing that's coming after me. It's clear with murderous intent, and it's maybe otherworldly because I've never seen anything like it. But I'd probably just try and kick it or something.
Yeah, I legit think I might go for the drop kick unless it turned out it was super spiky or something. But it's probably not because it's made out of clay.
Pretty sure there's more to this golem than just the physical attributes. It can, like, mind control you.
But he made it in a lab.
Using electrical engineering.
Like, it doesn't seem mystical.
Well, anything electronic is a little bit mystical.
That's true. I mean, how do they even work? I just recently found out that electrons don't move around in the circuit like I used to think, so...
Wait, what?
What?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't fully understand it. It's they don't move around the circuit at the speed of light. It just generates, like, a field that moves at the speed of light. Anyways.
Oh, the electrons themselves move.
They do move, but not that fast.
No, it's not that fast, but...
They move, like, really slow, actually.
It's because each one pushes the one in front of it, just like a stream of water. So,
yes,
you
know, the stream of water is not what's producing the current.
The stream of water is the current.
Well, it's not, because the current moves at the speed of light, and the electrons do not.
You know what? Okay, yeah, you convinced me. Yeah. You could definitely use this shit to make a golem, because I don't understand it, and I don't understand golems.
Yeah, so maybe, I've decided that physics is mystical. It's all magic. No one understands it, despite what they say. Okay, so we've all cleared that up. He's a magician, and that's how he came back to life, through the powers of electrical engineering.
No, that's not how he came back to life.
Well, you know what?
He tells you how he comes back to life later. The thing he says, if true, would completely change, like, our understanding of the...
Yeah, it's like, how did this... Okay, the nurse, Rose Esther, and she's in her office.
She's in her apartment, not that it matters.
Well, doesn't she have a receptionist of some kind, or is that just a doorman?
I think it's literally like the doorman, because apartments back then were a lot fancier.
Gotcha. So the doorman calls her and says, like, you have a visitor. And she says, well, what? I don't have any appointments right now. And she says, well, it's somebody who said that he's only known as the man with the scarlet bag. And she immediately knows what that means, because as we know from the intro, Peter Craig bought a scarlet bag because it looks like blood. And so she says, no, don't let him in. And then I guess he gets in anyways.
He instantaneously shows up in her room, which does make you wonder why he bothered hassling the doorman. If he can just teleport.
That's why I thought she was in an office and he was just like standing outside the door and it was the receptionist or something. But it doesn't matter. For some reason, he instantaneously shows up. Whether he teleports in or he just walks in because it's a small place or something. And he says, oh, hello, Rose. And she's like, Peter Craig, what are you doing here? You're dead. And he's like, well, I was dead.
Well, he says, I was Peter Craig. Now I am merely an old man with a scarlet satchel, which is a pretty cool line, but doesn't really, like, what the fuck does it mean?
Yeah, and what does the Scarlet Satchel have to do with the murder? I don't know. Was he planning this well before he died? Did he think he was going to get murdered? All of this is left unclear. We don't really know why he bought the bag in the first place, when he made the golem, or why, and why he got buried with the clay. Besides plot conveniences,
why he knows how to make golems, which is, I believe, again, a secret mostly reserved for rabbis and stuff.
No, that's explained. He's an electrical engineer.
Oh, yeah. Fuck, I forgot. Sorry. Everyone knows that electrical engineering and Judaism are basically the same thing.
You know, I feel like you're making a very weird assumption that all rabbis can make golems.
What, they can't? My cousin is a rabbi.
I'm almost positive they can.
Yeah, my cousin told me on good authority that she knows how to make a golem. I assume that that is most of what... I guess just Jewish seminary. I think it has a special Torah name, but I don't forget.
Golem 101 or Golem 101.
Man, dude, I need to read up on that.
Yeah, you really do. It's the one where you mix the horse semen and the blood together in a hole in the ground and bing, bang, boom.
No. That's Norse paganism, dude.
Fuck, dude. I was getting confused.
The golem making is the one where you write one of the names of God on a slip of paper and then put it under the tongue of a statue and it comes to life and helps defend you from anti-Semites of various stripes.
Wait, you sure there's no semen, blood, and mud involved?
Yes, I am 100% sure that no rite in Judaism has anything to do whatsoever with blood. And anyone who tells you otherwise probably has some fun opinions about, I don't know, certain world events and so on. I'm saying that I don't agree with the blood libel, you see. Anyways, I'm probably going to have to cut a lot of this. I think we might have drifted into actual anti-Semitism. Yeah.
Okay, anyways. So anyways, let's see here. So, yeah, and she's all freaked out because, like, obviously she saw this guy was dead, but now he's not dead somehow, and she doesn't really understand how. And he's like, I'm just going to leave you here with this bag. And he leaves the bag on the floor, and he just leaves. And then she keeps freaking out, and she's like, I don't know how he came back. I need to figure out what's going on. And then she says, oh, my God, the bag. It's moving on its own. Oh, no. It's coming out, bah! And she starts screaming and dies, or it cuts away, but presumably something happened.
Yeah, they describe her, how she was screaming hysterically so much that the neighbors broke down the door, and then they got in and she was terrified, said the word Scarlet Satchel, and then died of fright.
Yeah, which is all read in article, I think. The article is basically just talks about how horrible her death was, which is like, God, dude, I hope none of her loved ones are reading this.
Yeah, it's a weird obituary where you die in such a strange way that the entirety of the obituary is just explaining, like, how you died.
Yeah, how much pain she must have been in. And also, it goes over her last words that she mutters, which were apparently Scarlet Satchel, which when Willard reads this, it triggers a memory for him. And he's like, oh, yeah, the old man had a Scarlet Satchel. And then he goes and checks where it was kept, and it's gone. And he's like, oh, crap, we need to go to the cemetery immediately, which is very confusing why this is the triggering event and not the fact that he found all that other stuff that he knew was buried with him. It's like, you'd think you would go check the cemetery right then, but he didn't. He was too lazy or something. Yeah. So I guess he goes with Professor White to the cemetery. I guess they're still hanging out. I don't know. I don't know why they're still hanging out. They're just bros. This
professor does not have much to do.
I guess they're just bros now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They just chill.
They bonded over their mutual love of being poorly defined characters.
Yeah. And so they go to Craig's tomb, Peter Craig's tomb. But when they get there, oh no, it's empty. Shocking. And like, it's open. And he's like, how did somebody opened it? It looks like from the inside. And then suddenly, oh, Peter Craig is there. And he says, yes, that door was quite heavy. And they're like, wow, Peter Craig, you're alive. That's impossible. I saw you died. And not only did you die and you were had rigor mortis and everything, but then they, you know, pumped you full of the preserving. They embalmed him. So, like, you know, that's super dead.
Yeah. Because it's hard to get deader than that unless they'd cremated him or something,
right? Yeah, but he explains that he can't die, or he didn't die, or he couldn't rest easily because he was murdered. And when you're murdered, you can't rest easily until you get revenge or something.
And you can't murder until you get a full and perfect vengeance on those who killed you. That's how he says it. It's it's a curious. He briefly channels, I think, like Boris Karloff. And it just, I noted down, he pronounces that word extremely strangely.
Yeah. I enjoy his line reading. But it didn't really explain to me how not everyone would know about this.
Yeah. It seems like, unless he's the first guy to ever get murdered in this
every
world.
Murderer in history would get hunted down by a ghost. But maybe, here's the rub. They can't do it with their own hands. They have to build a robot golem that's about 6 inches tall, and no one else had the know-how or the technical or the steady hand to do it.
But there's just a bunch of ghosts like wandering around the country with like essentially murder blue balls, so frustrated that they can't kill the people and get some rest.
You know, maybe this is commonly known among a lot of people, except they brush it off because they don't care or they don't believe it. But he was like, you know what? Just in case, throw some modeling clay in my grave because I know what to do. I'm one of the few people who would be okay.
Now, I have another question for both of you gentlemen, if you will.
Okay.
Yeah.
So in this world, apparently, if you get murdered, you come back as a ghost or a zombie or something to get revenge, right?
Yeah.
You can. Now,
if the ghost murders you, do you come back as a ghost to try to get revenge on the ghost who murdered you?
Is it still count as murder if it's for vengeance?
I mean, it seems like it would.
Legally, definitely. But morally?
I think morally, yes.
Although, if we lived in the world where, like, the only supernatural thing was that you were allowed to come back to get revenge on someone who killed you, I guess that's probably the world saying that it's cool with revenge? Question mark?
Higher power that's allowing it.
I was just amused by the idea of, like, a circular ghost. Like, they're both ghosts. They're constantly killing each other. Then the other one comes back to get revenge on the first one. It's just this endless cycle of stupid shit. Anyways.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure reality would Stack Overflow. So that's the reason that's been disallowed.
They did the checking on the recursion function properly, so it exits instead of getting into that infinite loop.
Well, maybe you can't come back because your murder is already solved, because as soon as they kill you, they go away. Yeah. So that solves
the problem. So that's your revenge on them, is that they go on to their eternal reward as well?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's not a very sweet vengeance, but it is a vengeance of some sort.
Yeah. So anyways, Craig explains this, and then he takes out a little clay doll from the satchel, and he has this line that I was quite taken with, where he says, oh, sorry, let's explain what the modeling clay was, because that's one of the dumber things of the episode. So
yeah, you go ahead, because I don't really remember. This is the part I always spaced out at, because it's so boring.
Okay, so apparently the nurse and the lawyer had sent him the modeling clay as like a cruel joke, because it's a kid's toy, and they're like, "Ha ha, you're a kid." I don't know. It's just sending someone an inappropriate present. It's not like it's a diaper or anything, though. It's just, hey, it's clay, whatever.
I feel like if somebody sent me Play-Doh, I'd be like, "Thanks," you know. Like, I wouldn't think it was a joke, and I wouldn't be upset, but I would also not. I would be confused.
Yeah, it. I guess it could be kind of a lol random style joke, you know, the kind that used to be very popular on the internet in like the mid 2000s.
But oh my god, I'm so random.
Yeah, but this it's just baffling. The only thing I can think of is that, you know, in the 1940s mores, implying that someone was childish was very insulting, and so they sent him a toy. But even then, this stuff is not actually Play-Doh. It's the closest thing to it would be Play-Doh, but this is just straight-up clay that you could use to, like, do pottery or something. So it really is not that insulting to send it to someone. Whatever.
Yeah, I don't possibly see how this could be such an insult that he used it as his weapon of revenge, but, you know, clearly he took it a different way.
How did he know that it was from those two?
Yeah, it does seem like it was anonymous, but I guess now that he's a ghost, he's aware. Except then there, he was buried with it, so it seems like he should have been aware. I don't know, Rahul. I don't know.
Maybe he treasured it, and it really was a nice, thoughtful gift. And even though it seemed out of place at the time.
But then after he died, God was like, hey, you know they were making fun of you. And he's like, well, fuck them.
I'm going to go murder their asses. And he's like, I didn't even tell them that they murdered him.
I just told him about the modeling clay, and then he got so fucking mad.
Now you're going to hell. This is your fault.
Yeah.
So anyways,
then the golem kills Willard. That's it.
Yeah. It doesn't even do that. He just starts screaming, and then the play ends. Although Craig does have this amazing line right before the golem comes to life, where he's like, "I have put the modeling clay to good use. I have crafted with it your damnation."
That is a cool line. But yeah. I have a question for you guys though.
Yeah.
What do you think happened to Professor White after that episode ended?
I think he and Craig just sort of hung out for a while.
He's like, he was like, we're cool, right?
Look, I didn't know
that
guy.
Rob your lab or anything, I promise.
I'm not going to tell anyone what I saw here.
Can you tell me how to make a golem? That looks cool. Wait, is that magic? Like, can you only do that because you're a ghost or whatever? I don't know. Come on.
This before? And also, why didn't you have the whole robot buried with you, if so?
Okay, is there any world in which you getting buried with this clay makes sense? Because either you knew you were murdered and you didn't do anything to stop it, except prepare yourself for if you came back from a zombie, or you didn't know you were murdered, in which case you got yourself buried with a weird joke present, and either of those is silly. So what's the deal there?
How does he know so much about the backstory?
He wanted to come back no matter what, and the golem was his mechanism for that.
I guess the only way this story actually makes sense, I guess, aside from... No, even him coming back as the clay wouldn't really work. It has to be like he was some kind of mad scientist who had some way of bringing himself back. He brought himself, and he just happened to get murdered unrelated to that, and then he brought himself back successfully and used it to get revenge on people. But what we actually got is something far stranger, where it seems like he's simultaneously laying plans for his revenge while also not knowing that he's getting murdered. Yeah.
Hmm. Maybe he has an alter ego that takes over sometimes when he's not paying attention, and it knew. But it couldn't, for some reason, act more than, you know, setting up the vengeance.
Yeah. You know? Raul, we've now finished the summary. So what was the premise?
This dude, he was actually a mad scientist sent from the future. And he put his robot brain in that locket. And he needed to power the robot brain with clay.
Wait, this is the premise why you enjoyed it?
Yep.
That's the reason Raul loves
really
it.
Struggling here.
Well, at the start of the episode, though, you said you enjoyed it because you really liked the premise.
I liked that he came back and I didn't understand why, and I liked that he had a little robot companion and I didn't know why.
Oh, Robo baby.
Yeah, he had a little like Medusa Gorgon baby.
Destroy. That's what was missing from this was the robot voice just saying destroy, oh, yeah. Destroy, master of mankind.
Master of man.
Anyways, so I guess let's go around again. And would you recommend this? I'll go first. I'm talking with you guys through with you guys. Like, it really drives home. Nothing in this really makes any goddamn sense. But that only makes me like it more because there are sort of like vaguely competent radio shows are, you know, all over the place. They're a dime a dozen. But ones that are like incompetent and poorly put together while also having a few kind of scary moments are, you know, rarer. And I enjoyed this and I think you should check it out. Raul, are you still taken with this now that you've had the lack of understanding?
I don't know. I'm so conflicted on it now. But yeah, I still recommend it just because I don't know. I like it. I like it, and I can't explain why.
Fair enough. And Ronald, you still a no-buy on this?
Yeah, I'm a no-buy on this one. It was just a boring episode to me. It had its funny parts, don't get me wrong. I think the premise is pretty funny, but there's so much filler in this thing. For a 22-minute episode, that's pretty insane, or 24 minutes or however long it was. So I put it somewhere in between, you know, better than fucking a pig, not as good as eating a chicken wing with its bones in it.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yep. Those are the two ends of the human experience, and you got them in the right order, too. Anyways, you guys want to do a quick would you rather?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess I kind of really don't want to engage with the pig fucking one, if I'm being honest. It's too gross for me.
You know, I think Ronald's going to get a little too into it. And, you know, that kind of gets me into it.
What would you rather was around it?
Would you rather fuck a pig or be a virgin?
Oh.
You know what? I'm going to just say I'd rather be a virgin because, frankly, I could just masturbate and I'd feel a lot better about myself than if I bothered an animal. Okay.
Let's assume the pig could consent.
I mean, even then, I probably wouldn't do it because I just think that the sheer amount of like shame and weird feeling that I would have around fucking the pig would be too much for me to like deal with going forward. Like, I'm still embarrassed about shit I did in fifth grade that probably no one else remembers and that wasn't objectively that bad. I don't want to have pig fucking on my conscience.
No, I remember it. It was pretty bad.
We didn't know each other.
We don't have to really analyze this, would you rather, because I don't think anyone really wants to fuck the pig.
I kind of got the feeling that you did, you know, which is,
you know what? No comment. I don't want to talk about it.
You know, he does keep bringing up pig fucking. Anyways,
wouldn't it be weird if you bought me a pig?
Guys, the best episode of Black Mirror is the one with the pig fucking, right?
Yeah, it's so hilarious. I'm only watching it ironically. Anyways, so your house is burning. All living things are accounted for. You can run in and grab one thing. What are you getting, Raul?
Whoa, this is a would you rather?
Well, these just turned into weird questions, you know.
Just fun questions.
Yeah. Okay. I would run in and I'd probably grab, I have this amulet in this ancient Egyptian sculpture. Mm-hmm. I'd grab the amulet.
Yeah. You don't want to be cursed.
No, definitely not.
Play your cards right. Maybe the amulet contains a djinn, and if you say things very carefully, you can undo the fire and replace it with something worse.
Much, much worse.
Yeah. Ronald, what are you going to get?
Well, you said all living things were accounted for, right?
Yeah, you don't have to go get your, like, cat or whatever.
Okay, so the pig's safe. That's...
Oh, God, if you say pig lube, I'm going to be so fucking... I don't know.
I think normal lube will work just fine.
Don't be a weirdo. Plus, I can just buy more lube.
You're gonna get a pretty healthy insurance.
Oh, so you go get your credit card.
I get my stack of cash to buy more pig lube. Oh God. Okay. You know what I would get? I would run in and I would get a Mountain Dew kickstart out of my fridge. It would provide me with the energy I needed to escape the fire. So, you know, I chug it down.
You were already outside. What the fuck?
I'm like fucking Popeye with his spinach, okay, when I drink the Mountain Dew.
Have you seen the Popeye movie?
It goes straight to my forearms. You mean with Robin Williams?
Yes.
I don't think I have seen it.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good.
It seems
good.
Like it'd be good. Robin Williams is hilarious.
So. Yeah, he's
I didn't think you were going to go with weird. That was good. I thought that you were going to be very opposed to that. Interesting.
He's just so weird. He's just like, Popeye's just so weird in like live action.
Did you guys watch Popeye cartoons when you were growing up?
Yes, I did.
I mean, I used to love them, especially the World War II ones, which are, of course, very racist. But there's one of those where Popeye punches a Japanese sailor so hard that the emperor feels it, which I was amused by. And then there's another one where, like, Bluto is trying to get out of the draft. So he keeps faking medical conditions, and then Popeye keeps showing that he's a fraud. And they end up in a fist fight where Popeye punches Bluto into an orphanage. But then it turns out that the orphanage is actually a... like cover for a Japanese spy organization, because Japanese people are apparently indistinguishable to Westerners from children. That being the joke of the episode, you see. And then they, wow, of course, have to unite to just beat the hell out of some Japanese people. Very racist, but
you know, as a child, all this stuff went way over my head because I don't remember anything like this.
Yeah. I mean, 15-year-old Lawrence thought that that was very funny in a sort of edgelord way. Anyways. Christ, what am I going to get? I mean, I like my computer a lot, but there's nothing on it that isn't backed up or I couldn't get. I'm trying to think what, like, the hardest thing I had to work to get. There's a collection of Cthulhu Mythos short stories called Cassilda's Song that I had to have my aunt in England buy and, like, ship over the Atlantic to me. I guess I might grab that, or maybe one of my, like, really rare role-playing, like, game books. Shit,
that first one sounds pretty sweet.
It does.
Yeah, you know what? Actually, I'm going to grab my copy of The Beginning Was the End, because that book is very, very hard to find and out of print. And libraries generally don't stock it because it's also incredibly racist and contains, like, literally no true facts whatsoever. So I'll buy it. That's the one where it's all about how, like, humans lost their psychic powers but became incredibly smart because they ate brains, and that makes you smart. But... that also meant we lost our psychic powers, and because our brains are too big for our skulls, they're constantly, like, hitting up against it and, like, hurting us, and that's why we're all crazy. And it has this entire section in it where it's just pictures of various people next to the apes that the author thought that they looked like to prove that different types of people are descended from different apes, which, of course, he takes in a very, very racial direction.
I seem to remember you refused to tell me what ape I resembled, and I didn't know why.
I mean, that's just too dicey territory for me, man. Like, that book's very funny to read because everything in it is stupid and wrong, but yeah.
I enjoy that Lawrence's most treasured possession is...
No,
is like a eugenics...
Do you even enjoy this book?
Eugenics raises this book from, like, the mid-1900s.
From the 1970s. It's far too late for him to be doing the shit he was doing. But, yeah.
It took him 50 years to publish it.
Oh, no, unless there's a fire, I have to go retrieve this incredibly racist book.
My most prized possession.
How else am I going to know what brains I need to eat?
Did it give you recipes on what kind of brain to eat?
No, he's anti-you eating brain because it drives you insane and suppresses your psychic powers.
Oh, so then we're good then.
I mean, yeah, I've never ate a brain in my life.
I think it's all meat. This is going to, like, surprise you guys, but it's not terribly well written, and he doesn't really seem to, like, have a coherent idea of what he's trying to communicate.
Maybe he ate brain.
He probably at least pretended to. The guy was a weird liar, in addition to being a horrible racist. You know what? Fuck it. I'm going to say my copy of Over the Edge.
You already chose. It's too late. You're already in and out of the fire. You're a racist. It's confirmed.
Yeah, but I knew my ironic, like, laughing at racism is eventually going to just curdle into outright racism. Hoisted by my own petard.
I do love the fact that you have this book.
Go ahead, Lawrence.
I mean, Bianca get it for me for like our anniversary or something.
Listeners, I want you guys to know that he has sent us pictures from this book, so we can confirm that he indeed does have it.
In case you
were doubting.
If you can get into the mindset of a 1970s racist ideas about the world are funny, it's a very funny book. If you can't, no worries. I totally get it. Anyway, so what did we decide? Rahul, Ronald's getting a kickstart. I'm getting a racist book. What was Rahul's thing?
Oh, it was some amulet or some bullshit. Oh,
ancient Egyptian amulet.
Yes.
Some of the jinn. Probably evil jinn.
I like that this was supposed to be a getting to know you type question. And we got, well, I guess the listeners know me a little too well now.
We got a racist book, an amulet that doesn't exist. And what was yours like?
Kickstart. He's going to get a kickstart. Yeah, I think they sell it every fucking gas station in the country.
Yeah, but they're delicious. I don't want them to go away.
There's something beautiful about that. You know, he's like, he's running in. He's probably getting like second degree burns, smoke inhalation.
No way, man. The kickstart would cure all of that.
But on the way to the kickstart, right?
And then he's gonna rise phoenix like yes. from the flames,
yeah, even stronger than before. All right,
so that's like super strong,
yeah, with this
already strong
this thing that Mountain Dew invented to try to convince people to stop drinking coffee. Yes, beautiful. Anyways, you guys want to do some recommendations and cautions?
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay, Ronald, you want to go first?
Sure. Okay, so for my recommendations, I recently watched a movie, or two movies, but the first one's called The Debt Collector. The second one is just The Debt Collector 2. It is quite a fun action movie starring Scott Adkins, who you may know as Yuri Boyka, the most perfect fighter in the world. He plays Yuri Boyka in Undisputed 2. In this movie, he's playing an MMA collector. Fighter. He's playing a new character, but he's playing an MMA fighter who's low on money and decides to do some jobs for the mob as a collector. And he gets paired with this veteran ex-boxer who has been doing this for a long time. He's really jaded, and they basically just have to do collections for a weekend, and it follows them. It's a really fun premise. It's basically a buddy cop movie, but instead of being cops, they're mafia collectors, which is really funny to me.
The opposite of cops, you might say.
Yeah, pretty much. And the cops really don't play into the movie very much, which is really fun. And it has a very strange ending that's almost retconned by the second movie. But I definitely had a good time with both of those movies quite a bit. So I'd recommend them both on Netflix. I'm going to have a caution. Another Netflix movie, well, it's on Netflix right now, called Without a Paddle. It's a early 2000s, maybe late 90s.
Oh, shit, that comedy with Seth Green?
Exactly. It's a comedy starring Seth Green, Matthew Lillard, and Dax Shepard. It's about these guys who are basically going through midlife crises and decide to go on this like camping trip down a river, but none of them really know what they're doing, and they kind of get lost in the wilderness. It's terribly unfunny. I thought it might be good pod material, like if it was like so bad it's good, but it's just not. It's just, it tries really hard to be funny, and it's not at all funny. It's kind of boring. Don't watch it. It's just not good. I like Seth Green. I like Matthew Lillard. Dax Shepard I'm okay with because he was on Sunny. But yeah, just none of them do anything in this movie. It's written really, really poorly and just not worth watching. And that's my cautions.
Okay, I'm going to go. But also just in the time since we did it, I've thought of three things that I would rather have than that racist book. And I'm regretting my answer. So I mean, the picture of my kidney, the kidney plaque.
It's too late. You already chose.
Yeah. God damn it. Anyways, so for my recommendations, I have two movies.
The first is Savage Lands, which is an incredibly inventive sort of mockumentary slash found footage horror movie, although it almost has almost no found footage in it. The premise is that there was a town on the border of Arizona and Mexico that was populated almost entirely by undocumented immigrants that just like disappeared, like got wiped out in some act of horrifying violence. There was only one survivor who had a camera on him. And over the course of whatever happened the night that the town got wiped out, he took a bunch of photographs. They explain why fairly well, I feel. And then he gives one interview. He gets they decide to make him a patsy for the whole thing and claim that he somehow wiped out a town on his own. And, then develop the photographs. The photographs are super freaky and show the town being destroyed by something that came out of the desert. And then he gives one interview, lapses into a coma, and gets executed. It's very, very... I think it lays the politics on a little too much. It has a strong political angle, which is totally fine, but it spends a little bit too much time with people just talking about the political angle and would have been better served by a lighter touch on that. But it does a very good job of sort of exploiting how freaky the, like, desert of the American Southwest can be, and the idea that, you know, there's this like very stark demarcation where you're standing, you know, on a like road or something at the edge of a town and you look out and there's just nothing out there except hostile, like empty desert, and how terrifying that is at night, and the idea that there's something out there that's just going to come in and end everything, which I really appreciated. I think the TV trope, there's a TV tropes page on it which offers an explanation for what happens that I violently disagree with and don't like, but the movie itself is incredible and I urge you all to check it out. And then the second movie I saw that I really liked is The Siege. This is an 80s sort of Canadian, like, Assault on Precinct 13 style movie where there's a police strike and a fascist militia chooses that as an opportunity to go queer bashing. Things get out of hand. One guy gets away from what's happening and ends up in an apartment building where the residents decide to defend him against the militia. And it gets really like violent and good. It's kind of like if Death Wish didn't have just absolutely risible politics. Not that I care that much about the things I consume having good politics or not, but you know, this one, if the thing that turned you off about Death Wish was that it is actually like on the side of sort of killing all minorities, this one would be very much your speed. And as for my caution, heresy, you know, stop betraying the God Emperor and the Omnissiah. What are you doing? They love us. Stop it. Knock it out. Anyways, Raul, what do you got for us?
Wait, why would the God Emperor love anything?
Shut up. Stop committing heresy.
He loves devotion.
He loves mankind, dude. He gave everything for us so that we could have a future among the stars, free of Xeno scum and chaos filth.
Okay. Cool.
What if you're really into Eldar? Is that okay?
No.
There's Xenos. It's 2022. I feel like you could be in Eldar
super
now.
Super hot.
Yes. Oh, but man, I'm already into it.
God damn it. God fucking
damn it.
Said
super hot.
You guys,
yeah,
you guys,
come on, dude.
They made Slaanesh, dude. How could you side with them?
Who? Is that really hot? What is that?
I mean, she's really hot if you like weird androgynous sex monsters that have that are like sort of Cenobites but grosser.
Keep going. Yes. Yeah. Keep going.
I mean, who doesn't like that?
Why'd you stop? God damn it, Lawrence. Oh, I'm just gonna have to replay that sentence you said over and over.
Anyways, come on, plug some shit or whatever.
I haven't watched really anything or done anything, period, since our last podcast. So my
it's
only
been
caution
3 weeks. 3 weeks ago.
Okay, all right. You know, I have a pro of there's a female power lifter, Hunter Henderson, and you know what? Never mind. That's not my pro.
Do you want your head squashed in between?
No, she just pees like crazy sometimes when she deadlifts.
What?
It's a common thing. It's a common thing, but in this case, it's like a fucking
happening?
River. It's like a river. So
this has been quite the day for us, just having weird sex things.
It's not sexual. It's just a pro.
It sounds sexual. You just plugged watching a woman deadlift and
I'm not
pee all
plugging
over
it. I'm just recommending it. You know,
were you the one who was commenting on her thighs, or was that Ronald?
That one was me. I was just asking. All right, yeah. Just for a friend.
The woman where you sent us that video of her crushing a watermelon?
No, this was recent.
I for the I okay, so it. I guess for the listener who is not
privy to Raul's group text. Everything he says, this is a picture of someone who is incredibly over-muscled, lifting a heavy thing while people scream at them, usually in a foreign language.
It's just, generally the same guy.
It's so great.
This has like, been going this on.
Social media is
for
like
years.
You know what I mean? Like social media sucks in every other way, but like gigantic, steroidal, obese lifters is just like this is what it's for, man. This is what life
yeah,
is.
Yeah, this is what God imagined when he yeah, created this... humanity.
I mean, literally. The first video I ever remember him sending me was this thing called Captain America versus the Hulk. And I started watching it because this was back before I realized
no, it
that
was,
Marvel
it, wasn't sucked. It the Incredible Bulk?
No, I don't think it was that. But it was just like a guy, there was a guy doing bench presses and then another guy screaming Hulk smash whenever he started lifting. And I watched about 3 minutes of it before I realized that no superheroes were going to show up.
I don't remember that.
I thought that one was called The Incredible Bulk, and it was like a really huge guy, and he just says Hulk smash before he lifts everything.
Could have been. I don't fucking know. I think Captain America was in there too, possibly because one of the guys was wearing a Captain America or a American flag like gym shirt. Anyways, Raul.
I watched Spider-Man No Way Home. I liked it. I did feel like it was a little tired in dredging up all these like old villains, but I enjoyed it and there was some really good moments.
Is that a recommendation or a caution?
It's an exercise for the listener. I don't know, like when sometimes when you first start watching something, you're just like, it just feels like derivative. It tries and you end up liking it. I don't know what that is. Anyway, and I'd recommend against doing your taxes because they're annoying. So there you go.
Yeah, pro tax fraud. You heard it here first, folks.
Whoa. Not doing your taxes is not.
Tax evasion.
Yeah.
Pro tax evasion.
Fraud? I don't know.
I think it ultimately comes down to whether you get a refund or not.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. Do you get in trouble if you're supposed to get money back and you don't file your taxes?
You still do.
Here's an incredible thing I found out about taxes recently. Not from personal experience, but so if you file a fraudulent return that entitles you to like some massive like refund, they'll just give you the money. And if you don't, you could probably get away with it for a couple of years unless you're unlucky and pull an audit. It's very weird. So
This is a reminder to the audience that we are not tax specialists and you should talk to your tax advisor before taking any actions.
I should clarify that I found that out from a story of a man who did eventually go to prison for doing that. It's just that he actually had the money for quite a long time and I was very surprised by that.
He just got like a gigantic refund and no one was like, that's weird, we're giving $12 million to this rando. That's amazing. I mean,
it was like $1 million, but yeah, they actually did give him the money.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
It just makes you realize, I mean, there are all kinds of moments that make you realize this, but this makes you realize, as do all those other moments, that like money is like, it's in this weird gray zone of being real and not real at the same time. Like the IRS can just give it to you and then you're in trouble for like, you know, it's just like the whole, if you think about it too much, you just go insane. It's like looking into infinity, you know? Like
one time the IRS on my dad's tax form, they like were off by, I guess, the cents. So like they like moved the decimal point to. And so he owed like $400,000. He's like, obviously, I didn't even make that much money. How could I owe that much? but he had to like go through a ton of paperwork to get it fixed.
The IRS
very clearly. Yeah, exactly. So that should just reinforce that point of money is made up and the IRS doesn't know what they're doing.
Yeah. Anyways, Raul, would you like to plug something?
I've got no plugs. I'm sorry, dear listener.
Anyways, from all of us at Bad Time Radio, don't worship Satan. It's bad for you.
If you you'd like to recommend an episode of Old Time Radio for us to listen to, send us a question for the mailbag, or a pedantic correction, you can reach us at radiobadtime@gmail.com. Our theme music is Finger in the Bottle by We Ashore Dedicated off their album No Ski Here Okie Sap. Thanks so much for listening.
Well, I was gonna get rid.